of you, and I appreciate it. Good to be here with you. Looking forward to learning together and hearing your feedback and questions and comments and sharing with you a topic that I've always found very interesting, very important, and I've personally very meaningful, as I'll describe. I'll show you some of the sources in a second. There's a lot to say about this topic. It's a very important topic. There's a lot of people in great need of organs, and it can save lives and really change lives. And when we talk about organ donation, you know, I find it helpful to separate it into a few different areas. We're only going to focus on one today, a very important area. But I like to break it down to three different areas. Those being posthumous organ donation, meaning after someone has died, they're a cadaver, they're dead by all opinions, and there are parts of their body that can be used to help other people, whether it's skin, bones, or cornea that can enhance quality of life, or whether it's organs that can actually save lives. And that ends up being a discussion about, obviously, pikuach nefesh, saving lives, and also the issues of burial, speedy burial, benefiting from a corpse, things like that. That's all interesting and important conversations. You know, autopsies, lots of interesting discussions that have had a very prominent place in Jewish thought. Then there's like a middle area, I call it sometimes a gray area, which has to do with, let's say, DCD, which is donation after cardiac death, which are for patients who are not necessarily dead yet by all criteria, but their death is sort of facilitated or in a hospital to enable them to donate their organs. Also issues related to brain death and definition of death, a very important field and issue to discuss, which could also be fully its own, you know, conversation. What we're talking about today is living organ donation and what's often called altruistic organ donation, which is primarily kidneys. It doesn't have to be. It could be a lobe from a liver or lung. There could be other areas. Obviously, it could also be tissue, such as blood donation, right? It's very common. Or bone marrow donation, which we will actually talk about a little bit as well. But kidney donation, you know, in the United States, there's about 90,000 people on the waiting list for a kidney. People have to undergo dialysis while they wait. Oftentimes, it's very tortuous to wait, and the survival rate on dialysis is not extremely long, and people oftentimes don't make it. Many people die every day waiting for a kidney, and we have two. So we'll discuss, you know, is this something that a person should be encouraged to do? Does Jewish law or Jewish values have anything to say about this? And what should be our approach? And actually, this is something that, you know, as was mentioned, you know, I've been involved with working in a hospital now for 16 years. I've been involved in bioethics and written books on the topics and speak about it often. And I, you know, always thought about it and talked about it. Personally, never planned to donate an organ. That's just kind of not my style. I guess I'm just really concerned about my body and my health. And I kind of never thought that that was something that I would do. I did swab for a friend of mine. He was in need. And I thought, okay, it can't hurt to swab. You know, so I did swab for someone to see if I was a match because he was in severe need. And thankfully or not thankfully, but at the moment, I guess I could say thankfully, I was not a match. I felt relieved because thankfully he did find a match and his life was saved. In fact, he received an organ here at the hospital that I work at, and I was happy to see that his life was saved. That was in April of 2021, which when I swabbed. Then in September of 2022, I got a call from Renewal, the organization with whom I had swabbed, that actually I was a match for someone, a perfect match for someone for whom, you know, they rank people by their antibodies. So let's say someone's a 70%. That means 70% of people will not be a match for them. They told me I matched for a woman in Toronto who was ranked out of 100, meaning 100% of people will not be a match for her. They said, really, it's 99.99999. You're that one needle in a haystack. You matched for her. And I was shocked and horrified and terrified that I had matched with her. And I had to start thinking, okay, now this is not just an academic presentation. What will I do? And so I want to take you through some of the sources now before I share with you what I did do and how I decided that and how these sources influenced my own decision-making and those who consult with me on this issue now. And because, you know, Jewish law has something to say about everything that we can face. And I want to show you like the precedents our rabbis found, because kidney donation has only been possible for, you know, since the 1960s. So when we talk about our rabbis, you know, the Chazal, the rabbis of thousands of years ago, how could they have had anything to say about this, right? What relevant sources are there for them? And as you know, I'll show you and you'll see what you think if you agree, but I think that they actually found some very relevant precedent, some profoundly relevant precedent within our tradition to help guide us in these decisions. And I ended up finding that these sources that we're going to look at literally guided me step by step in my decision-making process and what they led me to. So I'll share with you some of the sources. They start somewhat less relevant, so to speak, kind of more general principles, and then they become more and more deeply connected to our issue. So the first source that I want to share with you is a classical Gemara in Bava Metzia. The Gemara says as follows. The Talmud says, there's two people walking on their way. They're in the desert. They're in the middle of nowhere, right? They're going on the way. They're in the middle of nowhere. Uviyad echad mehen kiton shomayim. And one of them has a flask of water. Im shosim shnehem, if both of them will drink from this water, meitim, they will both die. There's not enough water for both of them to survive. Vim shos echad mehem, but if just one of them will drink, magia leyishuv, then that one can survive. So it's either both of them drink, but neither survive, or one drink, therefore one dies, but the other survives. Darsh ben Petura, so someone named ben Petura, who is not quoted elsewhere in the Gemara, and there's some fascinating theories on who that was, which is for another time, but this individual, ben Petura, says, mutav shiyish tu shnehem v'yamusu. It's better that they both drink it, and therefore both die, and not one of them cause or see the death of the other. That was Ben Petura's opinion. Ad Shabbar Rabbi Akiva v'limed, but then the great Rabbi Akiva came and said, v'chai achicha imach. The Torah says, your fellow shall live with you, chayecha kodmin l'chaye chavercha. Your life comes before the others, and therefore, you're the one holding the flask of water. It's your water. You drink it. It's kind of like on the classic examples, like on the airplane, when they say to you, you know, if there's, God forbid, a crash and the oxygen comes down, you first save yourself, then save others. But your life comes first. And that seems to be the principle that the Gemara gives from Rabbi Akiva, that when faced with the situation of sacrificing our life for someone else or saving our life, we're actually required to save our own lives first. That seems to be what the Talmud is telling us. There is another opinion. In the Yerushalmi, what I just read to you is from the Bava Metzia in the Talmud Bavli, the classic Babylonian Talmud. But the Yerushalmi, the Jerusalem Talmud, says it has another story that might give a different perspective. It might not be a klal for everyone. It might not be a general principle, but it's just a story. But it says as follows. Rev Isi Itzdid Besafsufa. Rev Isi was captured in a city called Safsufa. Amar Rabbi Yonasan Yichru Chameis Besadino. It's so dangerous where he is. It's so impossible to save him. You might as well prepare his burial shrouds now, because where he was captured, there's no saving him. He's a lost cause. But Amar Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish. Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish came along. Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish, by the way, is a side point. We know he was someone who was like referred to as sort of like a gangster in the Talmud, and then later became a rabbi. He started out as a ruffian. You know, I don't know the right word for it, but a tough guy. And then later he became a rabbi, but he has this background as being someone who's very strong and very, you know, able to, you know, battle with people. So he came along. This rabbi, Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish, says, no, I don't think we should just give up on him. I'm going to go and either kill or be killed. I'm going to fight for my friend. Whatever it takes. I'm going to go and fight for him with strength. Whatever I have to do, I'm going to try to save his life. I'm going to risk my life to save his life. He goes and he fights and he maybe appeases them with words, implies, but whatever it was, he convinced them and he was able to save his friend Rav Isi, even though he risked his life. So the question is, who do we follow? The Babylonian Talmud or the Jerusalem Talmud? And it seems to be, from most of the commentaries, that we follow the Babylonian Talmud here, but the Jerusalem Talmud still exists. I mean, it is an opinion. There is such a thing as that. And so, you know, there might be room. But there was another source, and this is the source where I want to try to get more practical and really get into our issue and our concern here. And this, you know, I'll tell you how I ask when I talk to people about this often. You know, I often will ask people, raise their hands. You know, raise your hands. What do you say? Does Judaism support organ donation or not? And interestingly, by the way, as a side point, I personally found, this is not a clear academic study or research, but I used to always find that everyone raised their hands. Judaism does not support organ donation. That's what I would see people raising their hands. For whatever reason, when I'm asking audiences now lately, people are raising their hands that they believe Judaism does support organ donation. So there seems to be, at least in my impression, anecdotally, a shift. But anyways, so then I asked them, okay, fine. If Judaism supports organ donation, what's the source for it? Can you show me a source? When our rabbis were first asked this question in the 1960s, what did they have to look at? On the one hand, yes, they could look at these sources and they would say, okay, Rabbi Akiva said on the one hand, don't risk your life. That's when it's risking your life, right? Giving your life. But Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish said, well, you know, maybe there could be times when you could take a risk to save someone else. Maybe there could be times. So is it just based on that? Or do we have a better source? And fascinatingly, the rabbis had a very good source, a very accurate, you know, analog. And this goes back to the 15th century Egypt. Actually, it might even go earlier than that. But for now, we'll quote this source because that's what's quoted most often. But it seems to be that the Rikanti mentions this a few hundred years earlier. But 15th century Egypt, there was the following question. In fact, I'll read you the question because it's worth seeing it inside. The Radavaz, the chief rabbi of Egypt, 15th century Egypt, is asked as follows. She'alta mimeni odiecha dati. You wanted to know my opinion. Amashur isa katuv im amar shalton. You saw it written elsewhere. If the king, the ruler, says l'Israel to a Jew, Hanachli lekatzes evrachach in chames, let me cut one limb from you that you won't die from, and if not, emis Yisrael chavercha, then I will kill another Jew. So imagine the scenario now. Just imagine the scenario. You have someone who just captures a Jew randomly, and he takes that Jew captive, and then he approaches the Jewish community, and you know, some kind of like anti-Semitic ruler, and he says, okay, Jews, I know you all seem to take care of each other. You seem to be dedicated to each other. Now I have a challenge for you. I have captured so-and-so. This person's not your family member, your friend, just a fellow Jew. And I am going to kill them. I'm going to publicly execute them. And this is something that had happened. They knew that this wasn't an empty threat, right? Then he says, however, I'm willing to let him go free. If one of you will come forward and let me chop off your arm. If you let me chop off your arm, then I will save the life of your fellow Jew. If not, I kill them. I kill this Jew. So now the challenge is for the entire community, is someone willing to step forward and give up their arm to save a life? Now we presume, and the way the question was asked, that we presume that this person who gives up their arm will survive. They'll survive giving up this procedure. Obviously, it's still risky, and it's quite a sacrifice. And it's to save a life. Give up their arm to save a life. Who would do it? And oftentimes, I'll ask people, that's quite a lot to ask, right? We need our arms, and this is not the person's not saying that's their person's, you know, relative, their child, their parent, their spouse, or anything. You know, it's just a random fellow Jew. Would they give up their arm to save a life of another person? So the Radavaz has asked this question. So the question is, what did the Radavaz say? What does Jewish law require? And he gives a fascinating answer, because what precedent did he have? He simply says, the precedent is a general principle. He says, Dichsiv derachecha darchei noam. The Torah's ways are ways of pleasantness, and all its paths are peace, right? That's what it says in Proverbs. V'tzarech shemishpate torasenu yu maskim velaseicha. And it must be that the Torah complies to logic. So therefore, vesvara, and intellect. So therefore, he says, v'eich yale adatena sheniach adam l'samet einav v'lachtoch et yado. How could it be that someone should be required to blind themselves or give their hand or raglo or their arm k'deshelo yamitu et chavero, so that their fellow individual will not be killed? How can you imagine that that would be required? So therefore, he says, and this becomes relevant, very relevant, hilkach, eini roe tam ledin ze. I do not see that this should be required, ela midas chasidus v'ashrei chelko mishiyochol lamod bezeh. I think it could be very pious, and praiseworthy is the one who is able to withstand this challenge and actually do this. But then he says, actually, v'im yesh safek sakanas nefashos. But you know what? I don't know who's asking me. Is it a hospital who's asking me about this? Or is this just some kind of random individual who's going to cut off their arm in the middle of the shuk or wherever, and it could actually be life-threatening? If they might die as a result, he says, that's kind of like Rabbi Akiva's case. He says, Hareze chasid shote. That would be a pious fool, actually. There are certain types of piety that we might think we're being very pious and we're being very righteous, but it's actually foolish. It's not helping anybody. It's hurting. And we should not be pious when it's actually pious when it's a chassid shota, when it's being a pious fool. So if one will actually likely die or even maybe die as a result, they should not do it. Because your doubt comes before the certainty of that other individual, like we saw in the precedent of Rabbi Akiva, v'chayecha kodmin, that your life comes first. So in other words, what the Radvaz is setting up here is kind of a tripartite system. This is the way I like to see it. In fact, in my book, I made this as a chart with three steps. If it would be something that's not dangerous at all, so let's just give the example of blood donation, right? Let's say the call goes out, and this happens a lot. Calls go out, you know, there's a critical need for blood donation right now. It's not really dangerous to donate blood, assuming that the person doesn't have someone might have their own individual reason why they can't donate blood. That's fine. But in general, I'm saying, let's say a call goes out and there's a desperate need and you're in a place where there's a real severe shortage and they really need everyone to give blood. And the risk is so minor. I mean, it's almost non-existent of donating blood. It's so safe. Especially for the average person, right? Again, putting aside someone who might have, there might be someone who has individual risk factors. So that could be considered something that could be obligatory, right? Because it's not risky and it's saving others. But then he says, then you have the middle category where it is risky, right? There is a significant risk involved. But it is saving a lot of lives, right? So this is where he said, you know, that would be, okay, you're saving a life, you're risking yourself, so it's not required. But it would be a midas chasidus. It would be pious, right? It would be a pious thing to do. Then we go to the further category where it would be significant risk to life. Either, you know, certainly giving one's life or significant risk to life. In that case, he argues it's a chasid shota. That would actually be prohibited. So you have your kind of three levels of risk. As the benefit increases and the risk goes down, the more obligatory it comes. As the risk increases, the less obligatory it becomes. When we cannot require someone to give their life, to risk their life for someone else. We can forbid by Jewish law actually risk giving one's life for someone else. We cannot require risking one's life for someone else. So now the question is, we see from that Radvaz a pretty strong analog to organ donation, right? Will you give part of your body to save someone else's life? And now we seem to have some kind of precedent. Right, if it's gonna kill someone or possibly kill someone, you can't do it. If it won't kill them, it's pious but not required. If it's not dangerous at all, it's required. So how did the rabbis begin applying this? And this, by the way, is part of my. I have a little bit of a theory about why so many Jews seem to have thought or still think that organ donation is prohibited by Jewish law, and even when it comes to living donation, there's many Jews who have this conception that Jewish law does not support organ donation. And I think one of the reasons for that likely is because in the first generation of rabbinic scholars who dealt with this question in the 1960s, when it first became possible to donate organs such as kidneys, the first rabbis were not incredibly supportive. I'll show you an example. One of the most famous rabbis to deal with medical halacha, two of the most famous actually, was the Minchas Yitzchak, Dayan Yitzchak Weiss, who was the rabbi for Shaar HaTzedek Medical Center in Yerushalayim. He was one who was not strongly supportive. The other was the other rabbi, who was one of the main rabbis who answered questions for Shaar HaTzedek Medical Center in Yerushalayim, Rabbi Eliezer Waldenberg, the Tzitz Eliezer. He was asked this question, and I think his reasoning is relevant. He quotes that Radvaz that we just read, and then he concludes as follows, with the part that I put up here. He says, this is Tzitz Eliezer, Chelek Tes, Simon Memhei, 945. In the end, in section 13, he writes, Zos Torah Sa'olah. Here's my conclusion after quoting that Radvaz that we just read. He says, Debemokum Shiesh Vadai Safik Bekuach Nefesh. In a place where there's certainly a risk of losing one's life, as a result, he says, Yesh Lachria She'asur Lo La'adam Lenadev Ever Me'evarav Bekedei La'shot Lo Begufa Shachavero. It would be forbidden to donate a limb or an organ to save someone else when there is a certain risk to one's own life. Even though it's saving the other person from a certain danger, it's forbidden to risk one's life to save another life. For Ose Kane, and is one who does that, Hareze Chasid Shota, that's a pious fool. The Yeshno Efo Isser Al Kach Gam Al Arofe. Therefore, it's forbidden even for the doctor to engage in such a treatment. Hamavatzeh shelo yasakin b'kumva aseh damo shel chaveru zeh kedei lahatzil damo shel chaveru, in order to risk someone's life. Even though it's to save one person's life, there it's forbidden to risk one's life in order to save another life. Then he goes on, and just if you see here, then he says, "Uvamakum she'ein suffix sakana." But what if it's not danger to life? Uvamakum she'ein suffix sakana nishkafta le'einze. So afal pi she'ein kol chiyuv v'lo mitzvah ashum adam le'nadev ever kol shehu. Even though it's not an obligation or even a mitzvah, he argues, and this is 1965. So donate an organ to save some, for someone else. It's not obligatory, it's not a mitzvah, but it's certainly pious if it's not risking one's life. And so he concludes, this is the Tzitz Eliezer again, 1965, therefore concludes Al Kain, Ein Lis Nadev Al Kach Bestama. In general, I do not encourage organ donation. The Rofa Lebetzos and a doctor should not perform this procedure. Elaim Kane, unless Segel Chabur Shal Rofim, a group of knowledgeable expert doctors, Mumchim Yachlitu Achrei Iun Miduktak, after investigating this in particular case carefully, Shadavar Lo Karuch Besafik Sakanas Nefesh Leminadev, unless they've concluded that there's no risk to the life of this individual donor. So that was in 1965, and that was when a few rabbis wrote about this at that time, and they were, I mean, I guess I would categorize that as being discouraging, right? It's not necessarily prohibited, but it's discouraging. It's not strongly encouraging, and in certain cases, it is prohibiting, right? If there would be a risk to life, which sometimes there was, right? It was much more dangerous, right? They were not doing laparoscopic procedures. The anti-rejection medication for the recipient wasn't as good. I mean, the surgery itself was more dangerous. The recipient wasn't necessarily lasting as long. It wasn't as successful as a procedure as it is today. And by the way, even though the procedure has gotten much safer, there are risks to kidney donation. I want to make it clear that I'm not going to try to argue here that it's something without any risk and it's totally risk-free. There are recent studies that have shown that there are some long-term risks. They're very, very minimal, but there are some slight risks to long-term heart failure or kidney failure, some higher risk of diabetes. There are risks involved, obviously, right? Especially if someone, you know, is at the end of life and they're experiencing organ failure. So obviously having one kidney, if they need a transplant for another organ, this is obviously going to be a disadvantage for them. So there are risks. And so the Tzitz Eliezer came out in 1965 and was not exactly strongly endorsing, maybe even prohibiting. But that's 1965. Things did get much safer, and the procedures did improve, and the surgery got much, much better. And when Rabbi Ovadia Yosef was asked in 1981, right, a number of years later, 1981, and by the way, it's still safer today than it was then. But in 1981, Rabbi Ovadia Yosef summarizes the exact same sources that we've just looked at, right? The Rabbi Akiva and the Radvaz and the Tzitz Eliezer. And then he says, you know, it's much safer today. So Rabbi Ovadia Yosef writes, Ulam, be'emes, shenimsar lanu mipi rofi mumchim, now that I have heard from expert doctors, v'yiri shemayim, God-fearing doctors, shedargata sikun ba'otsasa kliya le'adam ha'toreim, that nowadays, the danger of donating a kidney, he mu'etet me'od, is very minimal. I mean, as I said, it exists, there is risk, and you know, and there's sometimes even death from the procedure. I mean, it's extremely, extremely rare. But it does happen. It could happen. You know, 300,000 or whatever it is. Uketishim v'tisha achuzim me'atormim chozrim libriyutam atikina. But 99% do return to full health. It's the vast majority. It's totally healthy. It's totally safe. Ulefizeh hare kol mashes kima poskim anal. Now all of that which the rabbis that were concerned about it, that we've mentioned before, she'asur lachnis atzmo safek sakana, that one cannot enter a possible danger to their life, zeirak b'safek hashakul, that's when it's like, you know, 50-50. Masha ain came benidon shalanu, but that's not true when it comes to kidney donation, live altruistic donation, shebevadai shemitzvah hi letorim kedei lahatzil et chaveru mimavas batuach, that it's most certainly a mitzvah nowadays to save someone from certain death because it's so safe. Yeah, if it was 50-50, maybe not. Which, by the way, implies, and this is also from the Radavaz, I didn't quote, it's on the sheet there, but I didn't read it, but another Radavaz, where he says that when he mentioned that 50-50, that whole thing about, you know, chassid shote being forbidden, but midas chassidus being encouraged, the dividing line was 50%. Once something is more than 50% risk of life, that's when it becomes a fool to do it. Once it's less than 50%, it becomes more and more encouraged. So you could argue that kidney donation could be like 80% survival rate, and that would be encouraged. But the fact that it's 99.9%, you know, it's even better. So that was in 1981, even, when Rav Avadi Yosef came out, and he said that it's a mitzvah, right? He used the word shebevadai mitzvahi, right? It's a mitzvah, not just that it's not forbidden, but it's a mitzvah. And the truth is, as you follow this in time, it gets even more, because as I mentioned to you, it's gotten safer and safer, and it continues to get safer, by the way. It's a safer and safer procedure. And let's go to the next page, and I'll share with you. Oh, I didn't even finish Rav Avadi Yosef, just the last line there. And the next page, I put it on the next page, says, U'lechein nirasha ikr lehalacha shemutter v'gam mitzvah. So Rav Avadi Yosef concluded, it's allowed, and it's a mitzvah letorim kliya achat mikleyotav. It's a mitzvah, and it's allowed to donate a kidney. So the next that I want to share with you as we get to the most recent is the Minchas Asher, Rav Asher Weiss, the Rav who's now the posik of Shari Tzedek Medical Center. So we quoted before, Tzitz Eliezer and Minchas Yitzchak, who are both not encouraging of organ donation in the 60s, who are the rabbis of Shari Tzedek Medical Center. And the current rabbi of Shari Tzedek Medical Center is Rav Asher Weiss. And he was asked the question. And in fact, by the way, before I even read to you his, you know, let me start to get a little more personal, because I mentioned to you that I swabbed in April 2021. I was called in September 2022, and I had to make a decision then. You know, what am I going to do? I never planned to donate a kidney. I only swabbed because a friend of mine needed it, and I always encouraged others to do it. Right, I always thought it was a mitzvah. I thought it was a beautiful thing. When I heard about someone who did it, you know, I thought, what a you know, incredible person, what a tzaddik, and I was always impressed by it. But I just thought, you know, it's not necessarily for me. I don't know if I'm up for it. Then I get this call, actually sitting right here where I'm sitting right now, and I remember just being like shocked. My heart dropped when I got this call. You know, they said to me very quickly. I answered the phone. You, Jason Weiner. Okay, you're a match. We have a match for you. You're the only match. They were very kind to say to me, you don't have to decide right now, you know, call your wife, to talk to your family, call your rabbi, but here's our number, and let's talk. And so I was in shock and really, really struggling and scared. And my first call was, of course, to my wife. My second call was to Rav Asher Weiss, this rabbi of Shari Tzedek Medical Center, this rabbi who I have personally asked a lot of my questions to. And you know, I was like, you know, I wasn't sure if I could do this or not, and I wanted to know, like, what is the halacha? And he said to me, one of the first things he said is, this is the Radvaz. You know, the Radvaz, we just saw the Radvaz. Okay, but that's not quite an answer, though, because how do we apply that Radvaz? The Radvaz said, in some cases you're obligated, in some cases you're forbidden, in some cases it's a good thing, in some cases, right? So so let me show you what he wrote, and then I think it'll become obvious. And I'll tell you our conversation specifically, because he had already written about this. In fact, he said to me, because I had talked to him about this before, he said, you know my position on this. And I said, yeah, I do know your position on this, but now it's not theoretical, right? Now it's me, and I need to know what I should do personally. So here's his position on this, and this is coming from, again, the current rabbi of Shari Tzedek Medical Center, a significant posek. Rav Asher Weiss, he has a whole long tshuva where he quotes that Radvaz. He deals with that Radvaz in depth. And then he says as follows. I'll make it bigger. Whoa, too big. Let me just show you that source. Okay. So Rav Asher Weiss writes, so now he quotes that Radvaz and then he concludes. First of all, v'chasher medubar b'tshumat meach etzem. What if we were talking just about, not about a kidney, but about bone marrow, right? What if it was bone marrow talking about? Where bone marrow is sometimes very, very difficult to find a match. And bone marrow, when you find the right match for someone, that could literally save their life. So it's very life-saving, but the risk to the donor of bone marrow is minimal, right? Minimal. It's much less than a kidney donation. So he says, V'chashir meduber b'chumat me'achet. When it comes to bone marrow donations, she'asakanet le'toreim hi kimat efasit. It's minimal. It's almost no risk to the donor, right? He says, Af im naniach she'esh b'chumat zu sakana rechoka. Even if you're going to say that there's some very distant risk, chiyuv gamor hu. I would actually say you are obligated. If a person finds out that they are a match and they are the one match and they could save a life by donating bone marrow to someone, I would say they must. If they want to know Jewish law on that, they would be required to donate. Benogei l'trumat kli'ah. But what about when it comes to a kidney? He says, in this case, this is a fascinating statement he says here, lulei demistafini mechaverai. If it wasn't for the fact that I'm afraid of my friends, meaning I think what he means by that is the other rabbis, right? The other poskim. If it wasn't afraid of what they would say about me, mechaverai, hayalibi nota shayom, I would be inclined to say that today, chiyuv gamorhu. It's also an obligation to donate a kidney. I think donating a kidney is also obligated. Dechol hamechkarim mochichim shasakana letorim katana meod kimat znicha. That all the studies have shown now that risk to the donor is minimal and almost non-existent. It's so safe today. So therefore, maybe kidney donation is also an obligation by Jewish law today. He says, I'm afraid to go that far. That is quite far to say. And the benefit to the recipient is massive. So maybe it should be required. So he says, I'm not going to go that far. There was, by the way, there was a Satmar Rav in America, but a posek, I think it's called Vayan David, who came out with a psak that it's obligatory to donate a kidney. Though some people sent me this article that quoted it and said, oh, look, this rabbi came out and actually said it's obligatory. Should you go around now and telling people like, hey, by the way, Jewish law requires you to donate a kidney. You have to do it just like, you know, anything else. You can't eat, pork and you have to donate a kidney. Is that true? So actually I looked into that tshuva, and the case was a little different. It was about a person giving to his wife, and he was the only match for her, and he thought that the person is required because it's the only match. It was a little bit of a different case. It wasn't saying that you have to give to a random person. It's a little bit different, right? But anyways, Rav Usher Weiss is saying here that it seems to be that it actually might be obligatory. He just doesn't want to go that far because that's quite a lot to say. That would be quite a lot to say. You're required to give. So he says, I'm not going to say required, but it's an incredible thing. He says, it's very, very pious. It's therefore a proper thing to do and also proper to encourage others to do, not to require. You cannot say to someone that they're required for lots of reasons. In fact, when I called him, so then he said to me, so look, you know what I'm going to say. You're not required to do it. You do not have to do it. He said, first of all, what does your wife say? You have to talk to your family because it impacts your family. If nothing else, just for that very first little bit of time when you're recovering, right? You're going to be out of commission for a while and everything falls on them. So, and also, by the way, what if, and this is what he said to me, he said, the only time I tell someone not to donate is if they know someone in their family has a kidney disease that they might one day need a kidney. So he says, if you know someone in your family might one day need, don't just give to a stranger, just because you happen to match with someone, if you know you might need to give to someone else in your family. Although on the other hand, just by the way, they do tell you, and it's questionable how much this, you know, there has been some controversy about this. Maybe we can talk about this later in the question and answer session. But they do tell you that you and your family will be on the top of the list to receive if you ever need. Okay, but I even once heard about someone who wanted to give as their insurance policy so that they would be to put themselves on top of the list. I don't know that that's makes sense, but anyways, he said to me, he said to me, number one, you're not required. He said his words were, it's a gewaltig schuss, it's a very pious thing, but you are not required. I'm not going to say it's required. Number two, you have to talk to your family. They have to be up for it. It's not just a private decision, you by yourself. It's a family decision. Number three, he said, if anyone in your family might one day need, probably better not to give, right? Save your kidney for them. Okay, maybe if you're getting older and everyone looks good in your family and now you're getting into your late 60s or 70s, you say, you know what, no one in my family needs it, and soon they won't take my kidney. Maybe that's different. That's what he said to me. But he said, if you could do it, you know, it's a great mitzvah. Like I said, I was the only match for someone. So to me, the fact that I'm the only match, she was is a 72-year-old woman. She's Jewish, not an observant Jew. And I'm the only match for her. She'd been looking for 3 years and unable to find anyone and really suffering. And so, So I had to decide. And basically my question was, first of all, I started to realize, do I practice what I preach? I've been encouraging others to do this. I've been praising this to others. And now I'm faced with this decision. And I thought to myself, people have asked me this question before. Here in the hospital, people have come to me and said, I'm a match, what should I do? And I've encouraged them. I've also met people who have donated kidneys, and I have praised them. And now, what does it say about me that I'm so scared to do it now that I've matched with someone? And so I really had to do a lot of cheshbon nefesh, really, you know, critique myself and think about myself and like think, am I up for it? And people said to me, you know, I could never do that. And my response was, I never could either, but now I had to make a decision. And then it got practical, and I decided, you know what? Step number one, and this is what I encourage others, is they never force you at any step of the way. They say to you, any step of the way, you can back out. So they say, if you want to go through the process, there's a whole evaluation. We have to make sure they have to work you up and make sure that you're actually healthy enough to donate, and that it'll be safe. Because by the way, in addition to wanting you to be safe, the centers that do these organ transplants, they want their numbers to be good. They don't want to take a risky case that's going to then, you know, if something goes bad, it's going to look bad on them too. They want to make sure that they're safe in taking qualified candidates. So I said, you know, why don't I go through the process? Let me see if I really am even a candidate. I don't have to decide today. I can say to them, I'm willing to be worked up. I'm willing to take the next step. Let me go to step number two and see if I'm really even a candidate, and see what happens from there. And the whole way they tell you, no pressure. We will not tell anyone. If you back, in fact, when I met with the surgeon, he said to me, you know, he checked me out and he said, okay, from my perspective, you're good. But if you want me to, I could find a problem. In other words, he said, I'm happy to come up with an excuse. I'll make it up. I don't care if it's lying. I'll tell everyone, you know, I'm sorry, I'm not approving him for surgery. It was very nice of him to agree to get checked out, but I'm not letting him. And then he said, and I'm willing to take the blame. I'll make it up for you, and you can go leave. And as far as they're concerned, you were willing to, but I didn't let you. You know, so they give you an out every step of the way. So I remember one of my first questions. So I said, okay, I'll get worked up. Let me get worked up and let me see. And for me, I had to go to Toronto because that's where my match was. I work in a hospital where we do lots of kidney transplants, and I would have loved to do it here. I know the team very well, and I feel very confident here. And talk about, you know, pressure on my family. It's one thing to have a surgery for a few days and then come home. Another thing to have to go to another country, right? So that's a much more difficult. But so I said, so, and it, because of the insurance, I couldn't just have the patient come here. So I went to Toronto for a week. I got worked up. They check out everything. First of all, just as a side point, it's a great opportunity to get a real good workup and see if you're in good health or not. Because if there's something wrong with you, they'll find it, right? They'll find it in that workup. They check everything, all the scans and blood work and everything. And one of my questions was, I even asked one rabbi. I was scared. I was embarrassed to ask Rav Asher Weiss. I told you I asked him the question at first. I was scared to ask him this question, but one of my questions was, which kidney should I donate? Because I started thinking, which one do I want? I didn't realize, you know, the way it works is that they scan your kidneys. And in my case, for example, my right kidney was doing 60% of the work, my left kidney 40%. So they say, you're the donor. You run the process. We do everything on your schedule, right? We want you to be comfortable, right? Because you're giving of yourself. So therefore, you keep the better kidney. You keep the one that's 60, and we'll give your recipient 40. She'll be very happy to get that kidney. Even if it's not doing all the work, it'll get her off of dialysis and save her life. So it's great. So that's how they decide. Sometimes I was told if it's 50-50, they might choose the left kidney anyways, because if you think about it, there's more risk to your left kidney because, like they tell you, if you donate a kidney, you should not participate in contact sports because you have to protect that one kidney. Well, technically, driving is a risk. And in America, when we drive, you know, on the left side of our left side is more exposed in an accident. So theoretically, you know, it's more risk to your left side. So all else being equal, they might still take the left kidney. But still, I was wondering. Why was I wondering? The reason I was wondering is because I was doing Daf Yomi. And Daf Yomi, right when I was asked, came across the following issue, which I always thought was fascinating. I'm finding out that I'm an option to donate a kidney. And then kidneys were mentioned in the Gemara on the Daf Yomi. Look at this following quote. The Gemara says here in Brachos, Samach Amud Aleph, it says, Tana Rabbanan. It's talking about this whole issue of Klaios Yoetzos. The rabbis believed, the rabbis had this conception, that our kidneys give us advice. We get advice from our kidneys, which, by the way, is a side point. The idea with that is that at least what I remember, that my favorite explanation of that is that, you know, kidneys are borer ochel mitoch psolas. They take the good from the bad. They filter our blood. They're filtering, right? The kidneys are filters. And that's what advice is. Eitzah. Eitzah is filtering out ideas, filtering the good from the bad. You know, taking a bunch of options and trying to figure out what makes sense, what categorizing things. And so kidneys categorize your blood, so to speak. So kidneys give us advice. But which kidney does what? So the Gemara says something really, really interesting, right? It says, Shtei klayos yesh bo ba'adam. A human has two kidneys, right? Usually. Achas yuatzto letova, the achas yuatzto lera'a. One for the good and one for the bad. Umistabra the tova le'imino, and it must be that the good kidney, the one that gives you your yetzer ha'tov, your good advice, is on your right side. And vera lesmolo, and the bad advice is on the left. So I thought to myself, maybe I should give the left kidney, and then I won't have yetzer hara anymore. Not that I did anyways, but then I'll only have good thoughts and never bad thoughts. Let me get rid of the bad kidney, because that's the one that makes me do bad things. Although I felt a little guilty. Do I want to give a donor the bad kidney? Anyways, so I asked the rabbi this. He said to me, oh, come on. It doesn't mean it literally. It doesn't literally mean that. It's symbolically. It means your heart's in the middle. In fact, that's what the commentaries say. I'll keep the source sheet up here so you can see the sources. The commentaries say that, you know, it's symbolic that your heart is being pulled in both directions, not by your actual organs, but that, you know, you have the yetzer hatov, yetzer hara. We have good inclinations and bad inclinations, and you still will have good and bad, and so will the recipient. So you should just give the better kidney. It's a health question, not a halacha question, and just give the better kidney. So that's what I did. Obviously, I wasn't going to tell the surgeon once they told me, the nephrologist, that, you know, you should keep your right kidney and give your left kidney. I wasn't going to say, like, oh, I want to do this based on my Yetzer HaTov, Yetzer HaRa. But by the way, I then later saw that Rav Yitzchak Zilberstein in Bnei Brak was asked this question. He said, Muchan li trom kleya eze yitrom yimanit or smolit? Which one should I give, left or the right? And he actually says, Nemar Meseches Brachos, he quotes our Gemara, Tanur Rabbanan, Shtei Klayos Yesh Ba'adam, Achas Yotzto Letova, Achas Yotzto Lera, Umistar Ba'tova Liyamino, Vera Lesmolo. He therefore says, Lechein Binyanenu, Ulay Tachen She'adif She'yitrom Et Kleya Hasmolit. He therefore says, maybe you should give the left kidney. Maybe that is better. But honestly speaking, you know, you give whichever one. And in fact, I went through the process. I found out that I was a perfect match. Once I realized that I'm a perfect match, I was healthy enough. Everything was good. I started to feel like I couldn't say no. Not that I was pressured, but I started to feel like I would feel guilty my whole life. And I felt like it was an opportunity to do such a beautiful mitzvah. And I started to really believe in it. Started to feel like, you know, basically it took time for the idea to assimilate within me. And it took a few months to do all this testing and everything. And I finally felt like, you know what? I can do this. I feel confident that it's safe. And I feel like it's a really beautiful thing. And I want to go for it. And I did. And in fact, it's not that I don't have a Yetzer Hara anymore. Obviously, I'm the same person. We're all the same, you know, the same person. But I do feel that it helped me in certain ways, donating my kidney. I went through with it. It became one of the most beautiful things in my life. I mean, one of the things I'm most proud of, personally, privately, you know, which, by the way, is a side point, I didn't want to publicize it. At first, I thought, this is a bigger mitzvah if I keep it private. But I was encouraged by my rabbis, you know, it will help other people. It will encourage others. And by the way, I was encouraged because I knew of people, great people, before me, who had donated kidneys. And because I'd seen that they did it, and I reached out to many of them, I thought, maybe I can do this as well. And so I thought, if I can be a positive influence on others, maybe I should do it. In fact, by the way, after I publicized it, the day of my surgery, I publicized it. And when I woke up from my surgery, and a few days later, not that I woke up a few days later, but once I started kind of getting back to reality and checking my emails and texts, I had a number of texts from people with like selfies of themselves or just telling me that I'm swabbing. Now I saw what you did and it gave me the courage. I'm doing it now too. So it could be a positive influence on others. In fact, one person who I asked about this, who had done it 15 years ago, because I wanted to talk to someone. First of all, I talked to many rabbis. A lot of rabbis have donated kidneys, but I thought rabbis are too idealistic. Maybe I need to talk to non-rabbis. I found some doctors who have done it. I remembered someone who did it 15 years ago, because I wanted to know, 15 years, have you had any negative impact? He says, no, I'm in perfect health. For 15 years, it's totally fine. And he said to me, but by the way, I think about it every day. I said, what do you mean? He said, I'm so like, it's such a good feeling. I feel so proud of myself. It felt so good to save a life. And it was such a meaningful thing in my life that like, I think about it literally every day still, which I thought was beautiful. It also for myself, even though of course you still have a Yetzer Hara, Yetzer HaTov, I sort of get it in a symbolic way, which is that it has motivated me in many ways. For example, it motivated me to live a healthier lifestyle. I realized, you know, I only have one kidney left, so I better take care of that kidney. So like, for example, I have to be worried about diabetes. I don't want to get diabetes with one kidney. So I stopped eating processed sugar, and it's so much better for me, right? I've always wanted to stop eating sugar, but I didn't have the motivation. I wanted to stop eating so much, you know, red meat. I wanted to just eat healthier in general. And this is what finally kind of gave me the motivation. I've tried many times in my life, but now I literally will have the candy bar in front of me and I'll be about to eat it. I'll be like, no, you know what? I'm not going to do it. And it did give me the motivation. So it did strengthen my Yetzer HaTov, so to speak, in a certain way. And it did make me feel good about myself. It really, it has been a meaningful thing. Someone, with this I'll start to conclude, and I'll show you one more source, one more really interesting thing that just to some closing remarks. But I published a book right before I donated my kidney earlier this year. It's been 3 months now, by the way, and I feel totally back to myself, totally back to normal, feel fine, thank God. The first week was hard, the first month was not easy, and now 3 months, and I'm back, thank God, it's totally great. So I published a book right before, and that book was a finalist for the Rabbi Sachs Book Prize this year. So someone who's, I think that person might be private about it, so I don't want to say their name, but an important individual in the Orthodox community who was connected to that prize somehow, emailed me and said, I heard about what you did, and I want you to know something. I did it too, first of all. I didn't know this about her, and she said, I know you were very happy to receive that book prize, and it was a big deal. She said, for the rest of your life, though, when you look back on 2023, what you're going to remember is your kidney donation. That's what really matters. The book prizes, that's a nice thing, but it's not what really matters in life. What really matters in life are these kind acts that you do for other people, these selfless acts that will always be with you. And it just really, really, it was really moving to me, that comment. And, they say, like I say, this gave me this motivation. You know, they say that kidney donors live longer than the average American. But my question about that is like, it's not the greatest statistic because only the healthiest people are qualified to donate kidneys. So therefore, obviously they live longer. But I was thinking about it, and it does make you appreciate every moment of life, and it does make you live a healthier lifestyle. So maybe there is something to be said for that. But just the last thing, the community of donors, and just like that individual reached out to me, there is something, one last source. They say in the name of Chaim Kanievsky, I saw this in a Shalom Tshuva Sefer from Rav Shmuel Elazar Stern, who's, I like to read his Tshuvas because he's also into medical halacha, called Shud Shrive Eish. And he writes here, Shemati b'shem agon Rav Chaim Kanievsky Shlita. He was alive at that time, Rav Chaim Kanievsky. People were created with two kidneys. Why do we have two kidneys? Just so that we could donate one of them. Now, he writes that the place where Rav Chaim actually writes that is a book called Time of the Kra, where he actually says, no, we have two kidneys in case we need a backup. First, if we need a backup, we have two. But in case both are good, then we have two. And in fact, my surgeon told me this. When I asked him, I said to him, he's not Jewish, and I just said to him, do you think this is safe what I'm doing? And he said, I wouldn't do it too if I wasn't safe. And I said, well, why do we have two kidneys? And he said to me, our human body was created beautifully with redundancy because we need to have backups in our body in case, imagine throughout human history, you get bit by a lion or something like that and you lose a kidney. Your body has to be able to kind of adjust. So he said, your body adjusts. You need two kidneys, but then you can do fine with one. Because it always bothered me when someone said, oh, I'm giving away the extra kidney. But actually, in some ways, if you're healthy, our body is built that way. And I thought that is a beautiful thing and a profound thing. He concludes here, and with this I'll close. I just thought this is relevant. He concludes. He says, ki be'inyan ze yatza le'or chibur yachid miyuchad be'olam al yedei b'nei Rabbi Avraham Ravitz shayu chiluke deus b'neihem miyizke liyos atorim et kliyato laviyem. There was a fight in the family. They all wanted to donate a kidney to their father, and they were fighting who should get the right, who should get the honor to donate their kidney. I'm bringing this source to show that the sense of of dedication that I find in the kidney donation community. It's such a beautiful thing that people donate kidneys. You know, in the Orthodox community, I was motivated by Orthodox, by Jewish values. Orthodox Jews make up much less than 1% of the population of America, but 20% of altruistic kidney donors. I think it's a beautiful thing. So the kids were fighting over who can give to their father, HaBachor or Misha Tzia Atzmo Techila, or either the firstborn or the one who just volunteered first. He says they did a goral. And he said, you know, they're not, it's no obligation here, but they did a goral, and that was the one. So, so this was, you know, just an example of like how people are sometimes fighting for the right to be able to give their kidney. I heard about a WhatsApp group of kidney donors where someone posted on the group this new technology that there is, it's a possibility of growing organs in pigs and then donating them and then implanting them in humans. And someone posted this on the group and said, oh, what a shame. They thought people would say, what a shame. Why did I give my kidney when they could have just, you know, had this technology and someone else could have given their kidney? Like a pig, I wouldn't have had to give my kidney. But he said that on the group, people just wrote in, oh, wow. Thank God I had the opportunity to donate mine before I wouldn't have had that opportunity. People, you know, many people said to me when I asked them if they have any regrets about donating their kidneys, they said, my only regret is that I can't do it again. There is something very special about this opportunity. And what we see from this halacha, from the sugya here, is that Judaism does not require it, but it allows it and maybe even encourages it. And for myself in particular, I don't tell anyone that they're required. You know, it's a very personal decision. Everyone has very different reasons for why they might or might not do it. I personally was very scared. But for myself personally, I wanted to live up to what I've been preaching, sort of practice what I've been preaching. And so therefore, for me, it was a very special and meaningful thing. And I think it's something that the Torah encourages. And I think it's just a beautiful opportunity for someone who wants to take that
Thank you so much, Rev. Jason. This was so incredible and informative.
Thank you.
I recently looked up an article showing that Israelis are number one in donating kidneys to strangers in the world. Israel tops of donating to strangers. Do you think there's ever a way to elevate a lot of the American Jews to get us to that speed where American Jewish life could see it's so simple to, you know, think Jewishly about donating a kidney?
Yeah, it's a great question because it's exactly what I was mentioning before briefly just about, you know, being a role model for others. Because there has been this perception in the Jewish world that organ donation is not allowed. And what's broken that conception, partially it has been education, but primarily it has been role models. When people see other people doing it, so it becomes like, oh, wow, I guess this is allowed. You know, I'll just tell you a funny story just briefly. So, you know, I was nervous about sharing my story, but then I finally decided to share it, and it was covered in the local Jewish press. And I was teaching at a high school recently, just a few weeks ago, and I started by asking this question. I said, you know, raise your hand if you think organ donation is allowed by Judaism. And I said, live altruistic kidney donation. So a few people said no. And one person said, but wait, I think it's allowed. And I said, okay, why? She said, well, I think if I'm not mistaken, there was a rabbi here in LA who did it a couple weeks ago and it was on the Jewish Journal. And I was like, oh yeah, you know who that rabbi was? And then someone else in the class was like, wait, I think it was you. So, I mean, you know, by doing it and sharing our stories, that is encouraging. You know, Israel, there's been a campaign to educate people, but also share and people find out, oh wow, that person did it. That person did it. Maybe this is something that's like, I wouldn't have thought I could do this, but like it's positive peer pressure, you know, and that ends up being very valuable.
I just wanted to echo your comments. I donated almost 13 years ago, and it really was, I mean, back when I donated, it was to somebody I knew, and it wasn't, it was a much more quiet thing, and I was afraid to tell my family about it. Mm-hmm. And to this day, my mother doesn't know that I donated, but it really did change my life in many wonderful ways, and you and Rav Shmuley both will see that over the years as you move on. It's been a wonderful thing, and with all the positive things people have said about donation in the Jewish community, there's been some negatives in the past, and it's something that as a community we have to do tshuva for. It's less now, but there was people going to Moldova and to Central America to basically buy kidneys and be transplanted there. And that's something that, in fact, the only person convicted of organ trafficking in the United States was a Jewish fellow about just about the time I donated, which is why I remember. Wow. So it is a wonderful thing. And it really is amazing. And I do know from that renewal, even though they mostly it's helping Jewish people find recipients, a lot of other faith-based communities consult with them about how to do it themselves.
And anyone close to them, they will help.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, you make a good point, because it's really like there's really a mitzvah aspect of it, and not just in encouraging others, but it reduces the need for others to like make more sketchy decisions, so to speak. And now it's become a great Kiddush Hashem how many Jews are involved with this. Yes, I appreciate your comments. I mean, yeah, that is interesting. I've heard something like that before. I mean, obviously, you want to do the biggest mitzvah you can do, like the more good you can do. Oftentimes, though, with kidney donation, with donations in general, Sometimes I worry that it's like a little bit of a Yetzer Hara, it's holding us back from doing the most good. We say, I could do that, but you know, there's probably a better thing I could do, so I'm not going to do it. You know, sometimes people will call me and say, lately, since I've gotten more involved with this issue, I found that I'm a match for someone, I'm a perfect match, but that person is, 79 years old, or that person is this or that, and so maybe I should wait, and maybe in another year or two, another person will come along, and that I could save someone who has small children, or who's a child, and sometimes it's like, mitzvah habal yadcha atach mitzena, it's like you have the chance right now, and, anyways, it is once you save one person, everyone else moves up on the list, and it's like, you hopefully encourage others, so someone else will give, and sometimes I just worry that by trying to do it, sometimes the great is the enemy of the good, sometimes by waiting for that optimal, ideal situation, we miss out on doing so much other good that we could be doing.